Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you, and as we do on Wednesdays at 1 o'clock, Mitch Light from The Athletic is here to discuss college football. Now, Mitch, last week I did ask you if Vanderbilt could beat Virginia Tech or at least make the game competitive. I think you outright said no. Do you have egg on your face right now?
Hey, we need to go to the videotape. I don't think I said outright. Because while you were introducing me, I was wondering if I should take credit for claiming that they could beat them. But I don't remember exactly what I said.
We will go back to the tape. We will go back to the tape. Either way,
I think feel it was more on the fence. Okay,
I was going to say, either way, you were skeptical.
Hey, Mitch, don't let him do it to you, man. You were hold strong.
Who's this new guy?
We'll review the tape. Hey, Mitch used to be my for a period of time. Mitch was my boss, so Mitch knows that I'm. Mitch knows I'm on the level. But either way, Vanderbilt defeats Virginia Tech 34-27 in overtime. Diego Pavia was a revelation, a big win for Vanderbilt at home to open the season. What was the most eye-opening aspect of that win from Vanderbilt for you?
I think the lack of flukiness. You know, if we would have talked last week and say, okay, Vanderbilt's going to get out of there with a win, you'd say, okay, you know, the ball bounced their way, pick six, special teams touchdown. And I know you can say that Vanderbilt fumbled three times and, you know, they recovered them all over the course of the season. That's going to come back to bite you. They got a deflected pass for a, you know, interception, and Virginia Tech had that penalty where they had two number zeros on the field or whatever, and Vanderbilt got the extra 5 yards and kicked the field goal. So sure, some things did go Vanderbilt's way. But I think the fact that Vanderbilt, I wouldn't say owned the line of scrimmage, but looked equal to Virginia Tech on the line of scrimmage, the way Vanderbilt ran the ball and slowed down Virginia Tech's running game, which is very good. Not just a running quarterback, but their running back, very big physical guy too. So I think it wasn't just the win, Adam. It was the way they won the game. And then I think you can say, you know, would Vanderbilt have rather have made that field goal and walked it off? Sure. But I think Clark Lee as a coach would tell you, hey, he loved the way they bounced back from adversity and won in overtime and all that. So just a solid all-around victory. But again, just the method in which they got it done.
There are some prominent programs that are in deep doo-doo, to say the least. Florida State, of course, 0-2 to start the season. Florida crushed at home by Miami. But I'm going to ask you the question that's currently the lead headline on ESPN.com. What's the matter with Clemson?
How much time do we have? It is a complicated... You know, the easy answer is... And everyone's getting at Dabo is, you know, his refusal to go into the transfer portal and plug holes in his roster and having faith in his recruits. You know, he talks about he's got transfers. They're 25 freshmen every year. They're transferring from high school into the program. I mean, he's full of those corny sayings. It's a little bit of everything. It is, you know, would they have beaten Clemson if they had three or four transfers plugging holes? No, they probably, I mean, beating Georgia? No, they wouldn't have, but they would have been more competitive and it would help them in their quest for the ACC title. They have not been nearly as good at the quarterback position as they were obviously with Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence. Cade Klubnik was a former five-star, has not developed yet. He might still develop. They're not nearly as good at the wide receiver position for all of their, you know, acclaim with those great quarterbacks. They had a bunch of stud wide receivers. Now they're two top 50 freshman wide receivers. Neither of those guys really played until the end of the game. I don't know if they weren't ready or Dabo not willing to play his young guys. So, Adam, it's kind of a cop-out answer, but it's a little bit of everything. They're just not as good as they were. Are they still a top 15 program? Sure, but they're not nearly a top 5 program.
We'll talk with Mitch Light of The Athletic discussing college football. A slew of games this past weekend. We got even more coming up this weekend. Now, obviously, you know, Florida, you know, Billy Napier was on a hot seat prior to the season. We all knew that. And then you play Miami and you just get mollywopped by them. Will he be the first coach fired this season? And how many games into this season do you think it happens?
My guess is yes, he will be. And if we speaking of going to the videotape, and I used to laugh with Chase about this. Chase always asks about like coaches getting fired, and I'm always like, no way, he'll be fine, he'll be fine. I'm always wrong about that, so I'm taking the other approach now, just saying, yeah, the guy's going to get canned. But you know, it was just the method of the game. You look back and how uncompetitive they were, and just the swagger that Miami played with, and just the lack of swagger that Florida played with. They just did not look, from a talent standpoint, like they were close. You know, Florida's schedule, we've talked about it, it's just brutal. It's absolutely brutal. So it's just, do I think it's going to happen during the season? My guess is yes. A lot, I think, will be dictated what happens to the quarterback position. DJ Lagway, the true freshman, five-star signee, you know, he played a little bit. Will they go to him? And if he does look good, does that buy Billy Napier some more time? You know, if I'm evaluating and I'm the AD and I'm the, you know, a lot of it's too the transition of the school as an interim president, I just want to see a product that looks better. Like, there's different kinds of – if they're 3-4 after 7 games, but they're battling and they look like they're improving and Lagway's good, that's one thing. If they look uncompetitive like they have, like they did this last week, that's another thing. So I think we just have to see what transpires.
Before I pass it to Willie here, and I told Willie I only had one, but quickly, doesn't that add insult to injury after the game? The Miami players are going on the sideline and telling recruits that are there for the Florida game, y'all need to come to Miami. Y'all don't need to go to Florida.
It doesn't help. And, you know, I mean, a lot was made of that, and rightfully so. A lot of it, too, was just like the recruits are kind of right by the tunnel, right when you're walking out there. So, and they, you know, these Miami, I think they were talking to some South Florida kids. It wasn't like they were just walking up to people they didn't know and being like, hey, you need to come to Miami, don't go to Florida. I think they were talking to other guys they knew and stuff like that. So that's a logistics problem from Florida that I'm guessing they're going to address. It won't happen again. But, yeah, from a Florida standpoint, I think everything about that game was insulting.
Well, speaking of the insulting, as we talked to Mitch Light here, the Billy Napier clip, like I do think sometimes there is a tipping point, and the clip about the fan base, you know, it usually doesn't really matter what it is. If it's a stinging shot at the fans, a lot of times you just don't recover from that. But what I'd like to point out as a person who lived in Central Florida
all my
teen years, almost nobody I knew had a basement. Like, that's just not how they roll in Central Florida. So he's conjuring. He just is out of touch with the fans, I think.
I think, what if he got fired because that's the only reason? It's like, you know, we think Billy's making great progress, but he clearly does not understand the houses in the area, you know, in the area.
The architecture.
Yeah, how's he supposed to go into a home and recruit? He's going to ask to go into a recruit's basement when there isn't a basement. So
yeah,
one thing about that clip, though, when it was making the rounds was, you know, he did say right after, it's my fault, he owned up and all that stuff. But you're right. You are never going to win that game when you start challenging the fans.
Mitch, I watched the Connor Stallions documentary, and I don't know what we really got out of that. If you want to weigh in on that, feel free. But one thing that was noticeable over the weekend is now that whole game of, hey, you know, here's how it's coaches steal signs, and they exchange information, and they do this, and they got these methods, and now is that pretty much all out the window now with the communication system? That does seem like a big game changer now.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I saw any. You know, we wrote a lot about that in the off season. I think some schools said they still will have some signals, and you have to be prepared with stuff because if the communication goes down, you know, which we've seen, if it's down for one side, they both have to go. Neither school can use it, so you need some backup plans there. But I do think, yeah, obviously will be curtailed a lot. Real quick, if you guys want to get a laugh, I think Warren Sharp might have retweeted this. Jay Norvell, not Mike Norvell, Jay Norvell, the Colorado State coach, had a guy on the sidelines following him, holding, you know, they hold those big banners in front of this so people can't see what's going on the sideline, holding it in front of Jay Norvell while he's mouthing the plays to the quarterback. And as Warren Sharp wrote, he's down like 48-0. He's worried about, you know, someone reading his lips. It just kind of tells you sometimes how coaches take themselves a little bit too seriously.
So Mitch, I think a lot of people were watching the marquee games. And I think the one, if I had to choose one, that most impressed me was the way Notre Dame went down to Texas A&M and really made the key plays at the key time to win in a really hostile atmosphere. And now the talk seems to be, that might be the toughest atmosphere they play in the regular season. So I have, you know, Notre Dame seems to be in the conversation here.
Oh, yeah, everyone's putting them in the playoff right now already. And, you know, obviously a huge win going down to College Station. I think everything we thought about that game was kind of wrong. You know, the Texas A&M would feast on that young offensive line. And they had their problems early. To me, you know, full credit to Notre Dame, but almost the story of that game was the lack of offense, too, for lack of playmakers at wide receiver from Texas A&M. And Connor Wegman, a former five-star quarterback, did not throw the ball that well there. So, yeah, I mean, that was a huge early season test for Notre Dame, and the fact that they won the game, it's a great sign of slipping through. You know, look at their schedule. Florida State at home before the season was one of their most difficult games. Doesn't look so tough now, but at USC to close the season, we weren't thinking it was going to be that tough.
Yeah.
You know, Notre Dame could have a playoff spot wrapped up by then. They could be 11-0 and 11-0 and lose that game to USC and still make it easily.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what the ACC champions record ends up being to get that automatic bid. That's something to track throughout the season. One more for Mitch. You mentioned for me, Mitch, and then Adam's got one for you. But you mentioned Wegman, the quarterback for Texas A&M. He was anything but impressive, and I'm sure a lot of people here in Nashville are wondering: is Marcel Reed on the cusp of maybe getting a shot at some point here? Because, you know, he's a guy that turned a lot of heads, of course, when he was playing for MBA here, and he's already, you know, decommitted from one place to go to Texas A&M. You got to wait your turn. That whole quarterback carousel, I wonder what's next for him.
Yeah, I'm looking, as you're talking, I was trying to look up, but the site I went too slow. I don't know if Marcel is even the number two quarterback at Texas A&M. I don't think he was in the preseason. I don't think he's close. I mean, Wegman is a guy that they believe in. He played some last year before he got hurt. Like I said, a former five-star. Clearly did not look great against Notre Dame, but that's a very difficult defense. I would be surprised if Texas A&M made any kind of change at quarterback in the near future. The interesting thing is he's got his flaws, but Haynes King, the starting quarterback at Georgia Tech, who's played really well last year and is off to a good start this year, was a starter at Texas A&M as a redshirt freshman, then got hurt and transferred there. So it'd be interesting to kind of monitor those two guys if King has a better year than Wegman.
Mitch, last one for you. If I'm not mistaken, there are two games this week with two teams, you know, being ranked against each other. That's a very weird way of me saying Texas is playing Michigan.
You need an editor.
Yes, I do need an editor. Do you know a good one? Texas is at Michigan, number three versus number 10. But of course, locally, we have number 14, Tennessee. It's at number 24, NC State, but it is a neutral site game in Charlotte, North Carolina. Should the Volunteers be on upset watch against the Wolfpack?
My first answer is no, but when you think about our overreactions in first week, two of the big overreactions were, wow, Tennessee's incredible, Nico better than advertised, and the other one was NC State, dark horse ACC champion pick, was losing in the second half to Western Carolina. So, like, if college football is, like, acts normal, which means nothing makes sense, then NC State's going to win this game, if you know what I mean, because of our wild overreactions. But just looking at the surface, there's a reason Tennessee's favorite. I expect them to win this game comfortably. Did not like what I saw from NC State. Watched a decent amount of that game. It was, you know, they scored with, I think, 2 minutes to go to make it 38-21. So even though it was still just a 10-point game in the fourth quarter, now they've got some really good playmakers. Kevin Concepcion was the ACC Offensive Freshman of the Year. He's very good. Jordan Waters, running back transfer from Duke, is good. You know, everyone knows Grayson McCall, the former Coastal Carolina quarterback. So they've got some playmakers on offense. But I was concerned, just did not like what I saw from NC State. So, you know, like you said, a neutral game, but I'm sure there'll be a ton of Tennessee fans there. My guess, probably even more Tennessee fans. So I expect them to win.
I will go back and review the tape. And if I misrepresented your comments on Vanderbilt last week, I will issue a formal apology.
I look forward to that, Adam. Thank you very much.
I you know me. I never want to misquote anybody. Mitch Light from The
No,
Athletic.
Definitely not. Definitely. The call-out answer is I don't think they're going to win. And sure, they can make it more competitive. If they're just a middle-of-the-pack team and Vanderbilt plays well, protects the ball, sure, that gives them a chance to win the game.
Ah! There we go, Mitch.
Thank Bam. You. Bam. What astute analysis right there. If they protect the ball. I mean, you should have that guy in weekly.
Tape don't lie.
I agree.
All right, we've got the tape. Mitch, thank you for joining us as always.
All right, take care, guys.
Yep.
No, okay. He said, I don't think. He said, I don't think. Okay, I'll give him credit for that versus outright saying no. Nick Frazier with the detective work there to pull up the tape. 615-737-1025. Our phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, how optimistic are Titans fans about their team season relative to how other teams' fans around the league are about their teams? We'll get to that next. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, 1025, 1063, the game. Tune in to 1025, 1063, the game this Saturday for Vanderbilt football. The 1-0 Commodores will take on Alcorn State at home with pregame beginning at 5 and kickoff at 6:30. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. Thanks to Mitch Light for joining us in the previous segment and Nick Frazier for making sure we heard the tape for Mitch to make sure that I was accurately describing what he said. I may have taken some liberties, I guess, with his opinion. Either way, I'm glad that we had the tape on that. So at this time of year, optimism abounds when it comes to NFL football because every team is 0-0. And the sky is the limit. Well, for, you know, most teams feel that way. Most teams' fan bases feel that way. Not everybody's. But for the most part, optimism abounds at the start of the season. So The Athletic, speaking of Mitch Light, The Athletic unveiled its NFL Hope-O-Meter results today, ranking how optimistic fans are on all 32 teams. Now, according to The Athletic, they asked a simple question. Are you optimistic about your team? Yes or no? They kept it open-ended other than that. Nearly 12,000 fans responded. So to give you some context, the number one team on the list with 98.8% optimism, the Detroit Lions, according to the survey, 98.
That's got to be a record.
It has to be. 98.8% of Detroit Lions fans who participated in this survey are optimistic about the Lions season, which is more than the Kansas City Chiefs. At 98.7%, they were second. The Titans appear on the list at number 22 with 69.9% optimism. So according to the Titans fans who participated in this survey from The Athletic, 69.9% of Titans fans are optimistic about the season. Now, we don't know how many of the respondents were Titans fans, so we don't know what the sample is here. But I feel like 69.9%, I honestly feel like at first blush, it's a little high. I feel like there is optimism about the Titans, but nearly 70% off the top of my head feels a little high. Now, as a part of this, they also included, The Athletic that is, also included comments from fans of those teams and why they feel optimistic or pessimistic. So one optimistic fan wrote, quote, a roster makeover was needed almost as much as the coaching staff, and I am a huge fan of Mike Vrabel. If the offensive line can come together, then the playoffs are highly possible. A pessimist said, I'm optimistic about the long-term success of the club, but I think this season will be frustrating. Will Levis has yet to show that he knows anything other than YOLO ball, which could be fun if the receiving core pans out. I think this will be a fun season full of frustrating losses. So, gentlemen, 69.9% of Titans fans in this survey are optimistic about the season. I feel like that's a little high. What do you think?
Wow. And then contrast that to the team right below them, the Buffalo Bills, who do have their, you know, elite franchise quarterback, as many have said, and they only have a 60.7% optimism. So, wow, man. That much changed in a year with the Buffalo
Bills?
Don't
we think it's relative, though? Don't we think that, you know, optimistic for what? That they'll be better, that the Titans will be better than expected? Like, I think the Bills, the bar is higher, right? The optimistic means you're optimistic that they could win the Super Bowl. That's sort of their standard, right?
Yeah, I guess if you want to, because they see Buffalo as a top-tier team anyway, but as far as – you know, making it to the Super Bowl, their optimism it's a little bit lower because losing Stephon Diggs, because losing, you know, a portion of their secondary. This is a revamped team, so to speak, and they're going to be looking for Josh Allen to carry a lot of the load, even more than what he has done in previous years. So maybe that could be. But the Titans, based on, you know, preseason predictions of this team, I think what the over-under was 6.5, and a lot of people had them under 6.5. I think that's, if it was me, I probably would have the same optimism, or I do. Now, whether, you know, the percentage of it, I don't know, but I would think, based upon where many people say this team is going to be and what they have done with this roster, I think 69%, close to 70%, I don't think that's too high. I just think they're looking at it from the standpoint of the players that you brought in, whether it be Snead, Jones, who you just got a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, Cushenberry, the guys that you've drafted, you have to look from a platform of optimism, because this roster wasn't that way last year. Even the top-tier guys were not as good as they are this season. And they managed, what, 6 wins last season with a horrible offensive line? If we do expect the offensive line to get better with Bill Callahan being their coach, then I would tend to say the optimism level at 69% isn't like – high in a sense, or I don't see it being outside of the norm. I just think you look at this roster with the additions that they made, and listen, they ultimately have to play football on the field. I get it. But from the guys that they have added, they did upgrade the roster, at least the top half of the roster.
I think the fact that the roster is so different and new with the new coaching staff probably has people more optimistic just because it's so new. But guys, I did not major in psychology and human behavior at Vanderbilt. I did take one class, and I think I got a C-, and I think, if I remember correctly, I was happy to get the C-. I was really worried that it was
going to C's get degrees, my friend. C's get degrees.
I mean,
don't let anybody tell you different.
I was glad to get through it. But I did kind of have my mind go in that direction when I was asking myself, okay, before a season, our fans in general, before they see their team on the field, right? It's easier to be hopeful. Everybody's got hope. Now, I would love to see the Athletic to do this same poll and try to get basically the same people to do this again after 4 weeks to see what how the numbers would change based on you see it. Because I kind of love how they left it open, because in theory, I could be sitting there going, yeah, I'm optimistic about the Titans. I think they're going to win 8 games. That's optimistic, but that doesn't really get them where ultimately any team wants to be. That's just being better than we think they might be, right? So there's a couple angles to that it comes down to sort of psychology and human nature.
I just want to point out, by the way, as Willie made sure to mention to me when I shared this with the both of you, the lowest ranked team on this list, my New Orleans Saints, 16% optimism. I did not take this poll, but I am definitely pessimistic about the Saints season. Though I did see someone, I think it was Bill Barnwell, pick them to make the playoffs. Now, if they make the playoffs, nothing will happen. But the Saints deserve to be the lowest team on this list.
Yeah, but you know what's weird about that is they have a division that is as wide open as it gets, right? So I was surprised to see it that low. The other one I think I was most surprised at, besides the Saints and just how low that was how about the Cowboys at 19.9? Where is all the – is that just a lot of Cowboy haters? Because they lead among fans. They're among the leaders in most hated teams as well as most popular teams, right? They have nationwide fans. So when you get to 19.9, I would imagine that there's got to be some mixture in there of people that are just like, the Cowboys stink. I can't stand the Cowboys. I'm not optimistic about him. Like, how does that work? There's no rule that says you can't fill it out for another team.
No, well, I'm sure there isn't. I would hope that, you know, no one would go in there, you know, like someone like a Browns fan would go in and, and comment about the Titans just to lower the number. Hopefully that's not the deal. But here's one of the, I guess, one of the criterias that they sort of used. It says quarterbacks did not shape every fan's response. However, ownership, injuries, contract disputes, coaching concerns. So those sort of line up with the Dallas Cowboys. So no wonder they are at 19 point, whatever it is.
Because the coach alone.
Exactly.
Right? The coach alone is probably a big source of the 19.9.
Exactly. And that's why I think on the flip side, contrary to that, that's why I think the optimism for the Titans is where it is. Because I think they now believe that Amy is spending money to go out and get individuals that can play. I think they're bought in, at least right now, to the coaching staff that has been put together. And that alone brought them into potentially the offensive line being much better than what they were last year. Why? Because now Bill Callahan is the offensive line coach, and he's considered, if not the best offensive line coach in the league, one of the best, a top two or three at that position. So Titan fans can look at that and be optimistic and not think their quarterback is an elite quarterback. They may think Will Levis is all right at best right now, but I think those other factors come into play as well.
I do want to point out, to Willie's point, this is a comment on the Chiefs. The Chiefs were 98.7%, which was number two behind the Lions that were 98.8%. From pessimist but not really Will, quote, "I'm actually very optimistic. I selected no because it will result in a lower percentage, which will make readers angry, which will rev them up, which will somehow light a fire under the greatest quarterback of all time."
So people are not being honest with themselves when they're filling this out.
If this reader would have said yes, perhaps the Chiefs would have been number one and the Lions number two. But now there's bulletin board material, apparently, for Patrick Mahomes at number two. But you're right, Derek. A lot of it has to do with quarterback. I mean, look at the top teams on this list. Lions have in his prime quarterback in Jared Goff. We know the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes. The Bears have Caleb Williams. The Packers have Jordan Love. The Texans have CJ Stroud. It's tied inextricably, there's another big word for you, with the quarterback. And a lot of that optimism for the Titans is going to depend on Will Levis. I mean, if Will Levis shows signs of improvement that he can be a franchise quarterback, that hopometer, I think this is the first time they've done this. So we'll see what happens a year from now. If Will Levis shows out in his first full year as a starter, it'll probably be even higher. I mean,
it's going to be really big. Hey, Adam, I got a question for you because you have been a part of this. This is a card. You can see some of the things that The Athletic does, regardless of whether we're talking about their NFL coverage, their NHL coverage, baseball. They do this, right? They have some polls like this. They're all not quite the same, but they do a lot of the same polls for the different sports. How valuable do you think this is? I think it's interesting that they do it. I'm always curious. But like, if you're a team and you're looking at that, engaging it, let's just say you're in the marketing department or something, I'm curious what you gauge from that. But like, maybe you can give us a little insight from how these are put together and what some of the ideas are when people are kicking around. Say, okay, let's do a poll. How do we put the question out there to the readers?
Okay, first of all, I'm not going to lie. Some of the part of the reason why these stories are so prevalent is because it requires the readers to do most of the work. You just have to put together a poll and let the readers do the work. But from personal experience, and I'm not the only one that did this working at The Athletic, you know, one thing about it with so many talented people is someone has an idea and then other people take that idea. So I used to do a Predators fan survey in the off season, and I would ask questions about coaching staff, player acquisition, David Poyle at the time, John Hines at the time. And it is really illuminating, I feel like, because as you guys know, here being on the station, you get calls, you get texts, and it's a slice of what the fan base is talking about or thinking about. But when you get a good sample, You know, I feel like the last Predators fan survey I did for The Athletic a few years ago, I think I had maybe like 1,200 or 1,300 respondents, which was the highest of the ones that I had done. I mean, getting 1,200 or 1,300 people to respond to anything, I feel like, is impressive. And, you know, it does really illuminate, you know, how people feel about the fan base, you know, about the team. I remember specifically, I asked in the most recent one I did, which I guess would have been in the summer of 2022, and the one I did in 2021, there was a question about David Poile that I asked the same exact way in both. I took the same framing of the question in 2021 and plugged it into the 2022 survey, and the results were night and day. Like, there, I think in 2021, yep, most people were still confident in David Poile's ability to build a championship contender. At the end of the season where they were swept by the Avalanche, it went the complete opposite way. And I feel like that can be quite, as I said, illuminating about where a fan base sits, just looking at this year over year. So I believe this is the first time, as I said, that this is the first time The Athletic has done this. I look forward to seeing what it is this time a year from now. Seeing what happens with the Titans, seeing what happens with Will Levis specifically, and seeing, like the Houston Texans were in the top five. Where do you think the Houston Texans would have been if this exercise would have been done a year ago? 25, 26, 27? You know, with a complete unknown in C.J. Stroud.
If that high.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see, but I'm curious for Titans fans' thoughts on this. 615-737-1025. Where is your optimism level? Let's put it on a scale of 1 to 5. 5 being through the roof, this team is going to be the biggest surprise of the season. They're going to be the Texans of the 2024 season, coming from worst to first, making the playoffs, to 1 being the complete opposite of that. You're completely down on the Titans this season. So on a scale of 1 to 5, where are you on the optimism scale? Let us know. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, 1025, 1063, The Game. William, thank you. I just realized what we were listening to. 1025, 1063, The Game. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Eddie Murphy. Party all the time. You should see Derek on the stream right now. He's really feeling it.
Oh, yeah. Willie know who wrote this song.
Oh, heck yeah.
Who wrote it?
Rick James.
Exactly.
That makes sense. Anyway, we're talking about.
You might be entertained sometimes.
I mean, it's hard to focus with the song on because I can't stop the groove. Turn it down, Nick, so I can finish the show.
If you want to laugh out loud, and I showed D-Mace one of these, just Google Rick James interviews. They never fail to entertain.
Yeah,
they are some of the funniest things ever.
That and the Chappelle Show skit, classic Rick James Chappelle Show skit. But we're talking about optimism as it relates to the Titans. Nearly 70% of Titans fans who participated in the NFL Hopometer survey on The Athletic said they were optimistic about the Titans season. And as Willie and Derek pointed out, it's relative. You know, certain teams have higher expectations, and it depends on a lot of different factors, including the quarterback. So I asked for an optimism scale of 1 to 5, 5 being the highest. How optimistic Titans fans are as the Titans prepare to open their season on Sunday afternoon in Chicago against the Bears. Skyler on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says 2. You're telling me there's a chance. Josh says he's a solid 3.5. And Mark in Gallatin says he's a 3, and he predicts a 7-10 season. So we have a 2, a 3.5, and a 3 on the 1-5 optimism scale for the Titans this season.
So that, see, there's another example of 3.5 would be, you know, on a little bit more of the optimistic side, but he's still only saying 7-10. So that's where the bar is low, and the newness probably helps Brian Callahan. You know, because we've talked about this a lot. It's kind of be a little bit more about how it looks in the big picture than it is actual wins and losses for this year. I think it's going to be more of a feeling. Are they moving in the right direction? Is this new system, this new leadership, this new quarterback, do we feel optimistic that they're going to get there down the road if it's not this year? I think if they get something big this year, make a playoffs, you know, that's gravy, I think, for now. I think the more important question is the feeling of what's the next 2-3, the gateway into the new stadium. What does that look like?
I think if I think if Will Levis, I think I want to say a lot of Titans fans feel this way, but if you don't, you can text us and let me know. I think a lot of Titans fans will take a losing record as long as Will Levis looks like a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, we've said this before, and Willie's mentioned this. It's, yeah, you want the wins. Obviously, that's the goal. But in the losses, how does it look? Does it look like you were completely outmanned and you were completely outclassed? Or was this sense of fight in every game and it came down to, you know, a play here and a play there? That looks a little bit different from just getting totally outclassed and outmanned and outcoached. There's things to hold on to when you see that your team is competitive. I go back to the year before the Lions really took off. Well, they were losing close games. They were losing games and they were competitive, so it looked different. The Lions fan were optimistic about the next following season. What happens the next following season? They end up being one of the better teams in the National Football League. You can go down a line with teams that have been in the same situation that the Tennessee Titans have been in. You don't know about the quarterback. It's a new revamped offense and defense. Coaching staff is new. Then you go into the season and it looks, you may not get the wins that you want, but the team looks different. The team looks more competitive. Yeah. Now you just need another year. That was almost like the seasoning year to get everybody on the same plane. And then obviously the next following year is the year you take off. I hope that the Titans can get more wins than tough losses. But it's all about how does it look at the end. And you said it right, Adam. If Will Levis looks like he can be that guy that's going to be the opening day quarterback when they move into that new stadium, then the optimism is a lot higher going into the next following season.
So this season,
I would add a couple quick points. I do think their training camp contributes to the 69-70%. Mm-hmm. Don't you guys think? Because they won the three games. They looked pretty sharp when they played, and some of the question marks, at least in the preseason, look like, okay, this has got a shot to work, right? The new offensive line, the Bill Callahan factor. Like, even Treylon Burks is giving you maybe some glimmers if you're a glass half full person, right? I think that's part of it. I would point out that last texter, Adam, you said he was a 3.5 on a scale of 1 to 5, and he said 7 and 10.
Yes.
Marking, now, imagine
Mark and
last
Galton
year.
Said 3.5, 7
yeah,
and 10.
Now, if Mark said 7 and 10 last year, that would have been a 1, right? That would have been a no optimism. Right, because the expectation was, mm-hmm. well, hey, you kept Derrick Henry, you kept Byard, you still got Tannehill. If Vrabel's there, this division's winnable. So if you're optimistic, you're not saying 7-10. But this guy's fairly optimistic in saying 7-10. So that goes to Derek's point of it's all new, it's all different.
This Titan season is reminiscent of last Predators season, because at the beginning of last season, no Predators fan, I would say most Predators fans, and Barry Trotz did try to set those expectations to his credit. No Predators fans thought that the Predators were going to be a playoff team last year. But if you see the steps from the younger players that were coming into the lineup, and even if they missed the playoffs, that would be acceptable as long as you saw the team take strides. Mm-hmm. Now, they took more strides than we thought. They did make the playoffs. They played a competitive first round series against the Canucks and lost. It felt like that postseason was a cherry on top of a season that came out of nowhere. Now they add all of the high powered players that they brought in during free agency. Expectations are much different. If the Predators are expected to not only make the playoffs, but to do something of significance in the playoffs. And it feels like this Titans team this year is the same as the Predators team last year. That if the Titans push the teams at the top of the AFC South, even if they finish under 500, if they push those teams, Will Levis takes steps forward, then that would be acceptable. Do you feel like that's a good analogy?
Yeah, I think everything is predicated on how the quarterback looks in a win or a loss. The fan base just want hope and optimism at that position, because they're looking at every – not just the teams in your division. They're just looking at the AFC as a conference, and they're seeing these quarterbacks that are either at the top of their game or ascending to the top of their game. And they want to feel that same way about Will Levis. And if he goes out and he shows them some consistent play, even if they do lose more than they win, if he shows that he's doing the things necessary to be a better quarterback, is he doing the things necessary for this offense to move in the right direction, then I think the fan base will feel a lot different about him. Because I go back to 97 and 98, right prior to moving into the stadium in Adelphia. Those 8-8 teams were competitive. And heck then yeah. Once we started drafting guys and bringing and free agents in, I think once we hit that new stadium, I think the fans were optimistic based upon what we had did the prior 2 years.
That'll do it for us. Stoneman & Company coming up next. Don't forget, Silly Underdog Picks tomorrow at noon. We'll also make our NFL predictions as the NFL season kicks off tomorrow. Baltimore at Kansas City. Can't wait to watch it. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow at 11.
Be love. Love on your people. Love on your neighbor. Have a wonderful and blessed Wednesday. Peace.